It's time to talk UK sports with the voice of the Wildcats, Tom Leach. This is the Leach Report Radio Network. Join in the discussion by tweeting your questions to at Leach Report or email leachreport@gmail.com. And you can call 877-904-1080. Now, along with an outstanding lineup of guests and broadcast to the most passionate fan base in America, the Big Blue Nation, here's the voice of the Wildcats, Tom Leach.
Good morning, Big Blue Nation. I am not Tom Leach this morning. I'm Curtis Birch. You've heard me on Big Blue Insider, Sunday Morning Sports Talk, and Locked On Kentucky. I'm guest hosting today for Tom, who's taking some much-deserved time off after, you know, a long football season, and now he's going to get right into SEC basketball conference play. We're going to be talking about that today, and as every day, the Leach Report is served up by Wild Eggs. Here's today's guest lineup, presented by Sleep Outfitters. We're going to be talking to Derek Terry of the Catspaws, who was on hand for Kenny Payne's press conference yesterday. John Calipari did the SEC teleconference, so he can't talk to the media twice in one day, so he sends out Kenny Payne instead to preview Alabama. And in most instances, you would prefer to talk to the head coach, but you know, Kenny Payne shares some excellent insight into the team, and I don't mean to disparage John Calipari, but he gives a little bit more behind-the-scenes info than Calipari does. We're also going to be talking to Mike DeCourcy of the Sporting News about college basketball overall, maybe get into the NET rankings. And there was a story in college basketball involving a former Kentucky Wildcat and an official last night that has a ton of people talking. So we'll discuss that with him as well. Your Wildcat News of the Day is presented by Cardinal Point Financial, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. A couple of stories that I found really, really interesting that were circulating the internet was Milena Fish. That is the woman who was hit by Lynn Bowden after he was hit late and they drew a flag in the Penn State game. She sent out a tweet yesterday, and it was accompanied by a picture. I'll read you the tweet. She said, "I'm sore but alive. Lynn picked me up, and we reunited after the game. I'm tough. It may have hurt him more than it hurt me." And then there was a picture attached to that tweet, and they were in a little hug there. So kind of a happy ending to that, that she's going to be okay, because that was a scary hit, and it wasn't Lynn's fault because he was hit as he was laying out of bounds. The other thing that I saw, which everybody should be following along, it's probably one of the best Twitter accounts that you can follow, is Vince Mero. This was just a little bit of news. Sometimes Coach Mero has some thoughts when he sees something on TV. A day or two ago, he was watching College Football Live, and something said something bad about Kentucky Kentucky football going into next season, and he had to throw out a little correction, so be sure to be following along with Vince. But his news that he kind of tweeted out, he said, "I want to congratulate 8 of our players on being invited to the NFL Combine," and then he added that there possibly will be 3 more. That's a big number. I mean, it is a huge deal if you get invited to the NFL Combine. That means they obviously value and think you are probably going to be a draft pick, or at least potentially. So to have 8 Kentucky guys there is a big, big deal. And I think it's something that last season there was some consternation about Kentucky not having NFL draft picks and what would that impact be on maybe recruiting. I think a lot of teams were starting to use it against them. And obviously Vince Mero is the recruiting coordinator, so he, more than anyone else, is well aware. So I'm sure he wants to let everybody know that a lot of these guys from Kentucky are going to be at the NFL Combine. And I would venture to guess, specifically Josh Allen, if he's one of those 8 invited, and I don't think the list of who those 8 guys are at this point has come out, but I'm sure Josh Allen would be invited, considering a lot of people think he could potentially be the number 1 overall pick. So if he goes to the Combine, I guarantee his numbers will be impressive. But there are a couple other guys that I think would be interesting if they get invited up there. I'd love to see what they're able to do. Is a guy like Darius West, who everybody on the team says that he's the fastest guy on the team, and you don't really think about that from the safety position. But, you know, if he gets an invite and goes up there and runs a crazy 40 time, you're looking at a guy who's probably going to get drafted with the way he's able to also be a hard hitter and come up in run support. So it could be it could be a situation where a guy could go from, you know, right on the border of not getting drafted. If he can go up there and show out, he can get drafted. Final note real quick. There was some fun NBA action that involved a couple of former Kentucky players, as it normally does. Jamal Murray went for 36 points, 7 rebounds, 6 assists in a win over the Kings. And of course, the Kings have a bunch of Kentucky players as well. De'Aaron Fox continued his ongoing good sophomore season. He had 16 points. Willie Cauley-Stein had 13. Quick note is Jamal Murray is the leading scorer and for the number one seed in the West. So keep an eye out on him. I think if you're in that boat, there is no question that you should be an all-star, which would be something that John Calipari kind of predicted when Jamal Murray slipped a little bit in his mind and went a little bit lower in the draft than he should have. I believe Calipari was quoted as saying he'll be the best player in this draft. We'll see if that can come true or not. Links to these stories can be found on the Bud Light Leach Report page at TomLeachKY.com. You want to interact with the show, best way to do it today is tweet me at Curtis Birch, B-U-R-C-H. Coming up next, we're going to be talking to Derek Terry of the Catsballs. You're listening to The Leach Report.
This is The Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. You can follow Tom on Twitter. It's at TomLeachKY.
Welcome back into The Leach Report. Curtis Birch in for Tom today. You want to tweet me? I am at Curtis Birch, B-U-R-C-H. Right now we are joined by Derek Terry of the Catsballs. Good morning, Derek. How are you doing?
I'm good, Curtis. How are you?
I just got back from Florida late last night. I stayed an extra day down there. Was the cold weather much a shock to you as it was to me?
Not a shock, just a disappointment. You know, you
that's a good way to phrase it.
80 degrees every day to back to, you know, normal Kentucky January weather. So I had to put the coat back on and go out and brave the elements yesterday, but at least it wasn't raining or anything.
Yeah, that's true. That's just such a great attitude, Derek. You always bring the positivity. You got to look at the positive side of light, even though I guess it's going to be raining today. I want to start out with one football thing, and then we'll jump into basketball because you were I think you were there for Kenny Payne's press conference. You had a fun stat though about Josh Allen sacks comparatively to the rest of college football that you sent out yesterday.
Yeah, so Josh Allen's 17 sacks, which were a school record. It was also more than 13 other schools in the FBS, and it wasn't a pick on Louisville, but using Louisville as a reference, they had the least amount of sacks out of Power 5 schools at 11. So Josh Allen by himself had more sacks than Louisville's football team, but also more than 12 other football teams. So, and believe it or not, that actually wasn't the leading sack number in the country. I think his name was Sutton Smith from Northern Illinois had a half sack more than Josh this year, so he just edged him out.
God, daggone Sutton Smith. That's a name that will haunt Josh Allen probably for years to come. Okay, let's jump into basketball. The one thing that I watched a replay of Kenny Payne talking to the media yesterday, and I thought his kind of discussion about E.J. Montgomery and Nick Richards were potentially interesting, and I thought he made a great point when he was saying that we don't need them to be, you know, big stars necessarily, but basically, P.J. Washington and Reed Travis can't be asked to play 35 to 38 minutes a night, or they'll wear down. So we're going to need something from those guys.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's got a good point there. Reed's been playing a lot of minutes here lately, and P.J. too, but neither Nick or E.J. played double-digit minutes against Louisville, I don't think, if I remember right. So, you know, E.J. and Nick are two guys that I don't think they're ever going to play, you know, 20-plus or anything like that as it stands right now. I mean, maybe one of those guys can really turn it on and force themselves into a role like that. But, you know, I asked Kenny about Nick yesterday, and he kind of echoed what Cal said, that if they are going to make a run in the tournament, that they have to have Nick, that it's not that they want Nick to be good, it's that they need Nick to be good. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they need his presence in their blocking shots, and I thought it was interesting after the Louisville game that, you know, Cal said that Nick wasn't rebounding, and that's why he took him out. And it sounds like there was just one ball that he didn't get to that they thought he should have, because, you know, Cal's reasoning was he put EJ in because he was going to rebound, but Nick actually had more rebounds than EJ had, and he played two fewer minutes. So, you know, it seems like maybe they're a little bit harder on Nick, but that might be the way they feel that they have to coach him, so to get the most out of him. But Nick had a very positive sequence in that Louisville game. He got two offensive rebounds in one series and one that led to the Jamal Baker three. So he did some good things, and that's going to be his role, you know, getting rebounds and blocking some shots. If he can score occasionally, great. But, you know, I think EJ's more the scorer between those two. And, you know, like Kenny said, I mean, they're going to have to get a little bit more out of those guys, and I think they will.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, you look at EJ Montgomery and the fact that he is a freshman, I think people kind of forget that every once in a while. And the other thing to keep in mind, I think, and Calipari has said this on multiple occasions when he's been asked about Richards or Montgomery, it's basically, hey, when Travis and Washington are playing as good as they have been, you don't want to take them out. Now, obviously, there's a limit on that, as Kenny Payne pointed out. You don't want to play them almost 40 minutes a night, or they'll get beat down. But you want to play them as much as you can. The other comment that stood out to me from Kenny Payne was he talked about Tyler Hero as kind of an example that they might be holding up. And, you know, they've talked about Hero's struggling shooting to a certain extent, how they've worked on it a little bit. And Kenny Payne went into some depth about how, you know, Tyler Hero is hearing from a lot of people about his shot, and that may be impacting him a little bit.
Yeah, that's such a good point. I mean, you know, when you think about it, you know, Tyler's got Kentucky's coaching staff helping him. He's still got his dad, his high school coach, his AAU coach, all these pieces. Apparently, he's a shooting coach. He's got all these people who are talking to him about how to do that. And it was interesting that Kenny said, you know, he might take 3,000 shots during a day in practice or whatever. And then that same form that he had for those jumpers, as soon as he got into a game, he would revert back to his old way. And clearly that takes some time, but I thought the good point that Kenny made was, and I probably not just me, but I think most of us in the media maybe didn't recognize that despite Tyler wasn't shooting well, I mean, he was still getting points, and that's what Kenny talked about. And he did. He can hit pull-ups, he can get to the rim, and he was still finding a way to score, you know, 14, 15, 16 points a game, even without hitting a bunch of threes. And then you see against Louisville, I mean, he really made it look easy getting the 24 points. He went 10 for 13, hit four threes, and that didn't feel like something that, you know, he couldn't do a lot. I mean, I think you might not expect him to only miss three shots a game. I think that's probably unfair, but it feels like if he can get his shot down, I mean, the 24-point mark, you know, it feels like he could score 20 often. And that's a really encouraging sign, because I think they're going to need his scoring along with Kelton's. And then, of course, PJ and Travis, or Reed Travis, because, you know, Hagan scored the ball a little bit better against Louisville, but that's not really going to be his thing. I mean, his defense and running the offense is going to be more important than getting buckets.
Yeah, and I thought Kenny Payne had a great line about how Higgins hit a left-handed layup, and that was the first one he'd hit all year, including in practice, which was was pretty funny to me. And the other point I'll make about Hero, and then we'll let you go, Derek, is, you know, Higgins said after the Louisville game how hard Hero works and how much time he puts in. And I'm jumping ahead a few steps, but, you know, it might be a situation where Calipari starts to use Tyler Hero as the example, like he was using Shai Gilgeous-Alexander last year.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's pretty much what we've always heard about Tyler from his teammates, things like that, is that, you know, he puts in the work. And, you know, defensively, I think defensively Hero and Higgins have really done a good job creating turnovers and jumping passing lanes. And, you know, that they hunt for steals quite a bit and come up with them. And that's going to be really, really big going forward, I think, to have two guards like that who can make plays on the defensive end that lead to easy points for the offense.
Yep. You can hear Derek Terry on the statewide edition of Big Blue Insider with Dick Gabriel and myself Monday nights at 8 p.m. You can read him on the Cats Balls, and you can follow him on Twitter at Derek, what's your handle?
At Derek S. Terry.
Thanks so much for your time, man. Thanks for getting up with us this morning. Coming up next, I'm going to share a story from after the Citrus Bowl about a really cool moment that CJ Conrad and Cash Daniel had that I was able to get on camera. I'm Curtis Birch. You can follow me on Twitter at Curtis Birch, B-U-R-C-H. We'll be right back on The Leach Report.
It's the
Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. Tweet us at Leach Report or email leachreport@gmail.com.
Welcome back into the Leach Report. I am Curtis Birch, in for Tom today. Best way to interact with the show this morning is to tweet me at Curtis Birch, B-U-R-C-H. Kathy tweeted in and asked, please tell us the UK players invited to the combine. Don't know yet, Kathy. That was just Vince tweeting out the number of guys who were invited. Those things become official a little bit later on this month, I believe. So as soon as we get that information, we will share it with you. You know, I was down in the Citrus Bowl as I was talking with Derek there. Just got back yesterday from Florida, and there were a couple just really, really cool moments. You know, everybody's been talking about them the past few days. But, you know, the one thing that I got the chance to do, and I know it was just me because all the rest of the media had left at this point. After the game, we were allowed, of course, to interview a couple other players that weren't on the podium, Josh Allen and Benny Snell. You know, the two pillars of the Kentucky program. Talked with Mark Stoops on to the whole media room, and then afterwards it was, you know, Terry Wilson, Cash Daniel, C.J. Conrad all spoke, and I talked to Cash Daniel, and then I went over to C.J. Conrad, and, you know, I think most people kind of understand how these gaggles work, where guys are talking at the same time, and basically one crowd of media will migrate from one to the other. So I migrated over to Conrad after talking to Cash, and you know, was just asking him some simple stuff just about his career and if he thought this was, you know, this is what he imagined it would be when he first signed with Kentucky. But as often happens, teammates start to kind of mess with each other, and you know, it happens all the time where a player's walking through an interview and then he'll put up his phone and ask a question to one of his buddies as he's being interviewed by the rest of the press. Well, at this moment, it was just myself and Conrad, and Cash walked up with his phone, and after Conrad finished answering one of my questions, Cash spoke up, and he said, CJ, how does it feel for 3 years you've played with your best friend, and now it's all over? And Conrad kind of looked at him, and he just started shaking his head. He goes, man, don't make me cry. And then all of a sudden they kind of came together, and Cash said, you know, I love you, man, and Conrad right back to him said, I love you too. And then they kind of walked off, and, you know, that was the end. And you know, it was just me there, and it was just a moment. You know, you kind of see these situations, and obviously football players are brothers, they call themselves that. And that's mainly from, you know, going through the grind of camp and all the tough practices. But with this season and all the stuff that happened with John Schlarm and Josh Pascal, and this team, I feel like, is a little bit closer than most others. I got that video of them doing that, and I'm going to retweet it in just a minute. You can find it at Curtis Birch, B-U-R-C-H. You can hear me every day on Big Blue Insider with Dick Gabriel. I also have a podcast with Kyle Tucker of The Athletic. You can find that. It is called Locked On Kentucky. Just search Locked On Kentucky on any podcast player you have. It's 30 minutes daily. And, you know, we just talk about whatever the news of the day is in Kentucky athletics. And Big Blue Insider with Dick Gabriel is on from 6 to 8 on WLAP, which I think many of you listening on that station right now. Coming up next, we're going to talk to Mike DeCourcy of the Sporting News. There were some interesting things that happened in college basketball last night. We'll get into that, the NET rankings, and SEC play overall. I'm Curtis Birch, in for Tom Leach today. You are listening to The Leach Report.
This is the Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. You can follow Tom on Twitter. It's at TomLeachKY.
Welcome back in to the Leach Report. Curtis Birch in for Tom today. You can follow me on Twitter, in addition to Tom, at Curtis Birch, B-U-R-C-H. Right now we are joined on the Kentucky Branded Hotline by Mike DeCourcy, and all segments with Mike DeCourcy are brought to you by B-Dry. Hey, Mike, I thought yesterday there were some little interesting things going on in college basketball, like under the radar type stuff, but I want to start you off with this. Scott Padgett, former Kentucky player, now coach at Samford, went a little bit viral with an interaction with an official, Carl Hess. What were your thoughts on that?
Well, first of all, I thought that Scott handled that circumstance very well. Because, in my opinion, the official was way out of line. I don't think anything that a coach could say short of a racial epithet type of situation, and I don't think that's what was at work here, would warrant the reaction that the referee demonstrated by what's the word I want to use? Rushing. That's a good word. Rushing from his position on the court into the bench area for Scott Padgett's team. There isn't much that one could say that would warrant that action from an official. And as I said, you know, you're talking about two Caucasian gentlemen, so I don't think that that's what was at play here. And I don't know that it's ever been clarified what was said, but whatever was said, it does not, an official does not behave that way. That's not how it's supposed to work. It's how it sometimes works in baseball umpiring, which is one of the significant problems with baseball umpiring. And it's something that very rarely occurs in college basketball. I mean, I can think of maybe one incident that I saw that was similar to that within the last decade. So it's not what should happen in college basketball officiating. And I thought that Scott handled it well after the game in explaining, you know, his surprise at seeing the official in his bench area. And then I thought that the player, and I don't know which one it was, from Samford, who basically escorted the official away from the bench area, the way he handled it was beautiful.
Yeah, when the player is, and I'm not trying to disparage player, but when the player is the grown-up in the room, comparatively to the official, something is completely out of whack there. And the quote from Scott Padgett after the game, he was saying, "Are you stepping to me right now?" When he was kind of saying, well, like, is this really happening? Because he went on and said, you know, I'm 6'9", probably around 280 right now. This wouldn't happen in real life. Like, what, you know, they kind of get... As John Calipari famously says when he's talking about opponents after they hit a couple shots, a little bit of beer muscles, you know, these officials have the power and they want to kind of exploit it a little bit, I guess, and it bubbled up there. And I thought Scott handled it about as well as you could. Mike, you were in Louisville for Kentucky's win over the Cardinals. Were you surprised by the outcome and how it happened, or did you kind of buy in after Kentucky's win over UNC that maybe this is who they'll be?
Well, I thought they were ready to win at Louisville. I thought it would be more difficult than it was, and it wasn't an easy game, but it was never an uncomfortable game. Mm-hmm. They were able to play pretty much the way they wanted to play. And when I say that, I don't know that they necessarily entered the game with that particular game plan, but once they discovered it, Louisville was not able to dissuade them from it. I don't think they went into the game expecting to do three-man weaves to dribble drives.
Yeah.
But when it became apparent that Louisville was not interested in leaving the baseline alone, and I think that there was a lot of sense to that, because you let the ball get to Reed Travis or P.J. Washington on the baseline, and you're in big trouble. I mean, that's unless you have your Dikembe Mutombo, whoever your version of Dikembe Mutombo is, unless you have somebody who can recover that fast, you give those guys the ball on the baseline with a half second advantage, and it's probably ending up in the bucket. So Louisville decided to stay home for the most part. When they were penetrated by the Louisville big guys, Wara, Enoch, Williams, etc., they mostly stayed home on those players and their replacements, and as a result, Ashton and Tyler and those players were able to get to the rim on a fairly consistent basis, and it worked for them. And once they discovered that worked, they continued to exploit that. And they were able to shoot a reasonably high percentage. They defended very well. I thought that P.J. Washington's defensive performance on Jordan Wara was maybe the decisive factor in the game, and unfortunately probably not as celebrated as it might have been. I did what I could. And I do think that after the game, John talked about the fact that that his players are buying into the idea that they can be heroes without necessarily scoring the most points. And I think there are going to be nights when every guy in their lineup leads the team in scoring, and maybe every guy in their rotation. Are you doing something to affect the game regardless? And if you watch that game closely, and those of us who are fortunate enough to be there, I mean, I watched it very closely. There were moments, small moments, when every single Wildcat made a significant contribution. There was a play that Keldon Johnson made late in the clock, where he just simply made one step with the ball to the foul line and drew the defense away and was able to get an open shot for one of his teammates. And it was a situation where they were really close to a shot clock violation, and he rescued them from that by being aware of the shot clock, aware of the time, you know, willing to sacrifice, you know, his own. He could have very easily have chucked the ball at the rim and been justified because the clock was lapsing. But instead, he made a really smart, concise play, and they end up with a basket. And Ashton Hagens with his defensive ability, and as I mentioned, PJ with the defensive job he did. And, you know, so Tyler Hero gets a lot of the headlines, and that's fine because he was terrific, and they need him to be that terrific often for them to be special. But there were a lot of really important plays in that game from a lot of players, and that's what's going to make, you know, it Jamal Baker, another. I mean, he didn't shoot the ball as well as they still need him to. When he gets in, he's going to get 3 to 4 3-point shots in his appearances, which usually are going to probably last no more than 10 minutes. And if he gets those 3 to 4, he's got to make 2. And he made 1. And the 1 helped. He's got to get to 2. But the 1 helped. So everybody is making contributions. And that's what made, for instance, 2012 special. That's what made 2015 special. And I don't know that this team is quite on the level of those teams, but you don't necessarily have to be on the level of those teams to make the Final Four or win the national championship.
Yeah, he is Mike DeCourcy of the Sporting News. Coming up next, we are going to talk a little bit about the SEC conference overall. Kentucky starts SEC play this weekend. I'm Curtis Birch, in for Tom Leach this morning. You are listening to The Leach Report.
It's the Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. Coming up next, it's Kentucky Sports Radio with Matt Jones.
Welcome back into the Leach Report. Curtis Birch in for Tom today. You can tweet the show at Curtis Birch, B-U-R-C-H. We are joined by Mike DeCourcy, who is on the Kentucky branded hotline. Let's jump into the SEC overall, Mike. And my kind of thought process on this, the SEC had really, really high hopes for a basketball conference going into the season. And I think the top of it has pretty much lived up. Kentucky had some bumps. I think Auburn had a bump or two that you didn't necessarily expect. But those top teams, including Mississippi State now, I think you can mix in, have all performed pretty well. But the middle to bottom have had some hiccups, and Vandy had an injury. What do you think of the state of the SEC right now as they start conference play?
Yeah, I think it's been disappointing overall, because my theory on conferences, the way I look at it is, like, you wanted 14 members, so you got to, you know, you got to eat all of them, you know? I mean, you don't, my father used to say, your eyes are bigger than your stomach if you took too much spaghetti or whatever, you know? And you know, if you wanted 14 and more than half of them or half of them aren't very good, then, you know, that counts too, is kind of what I'm saying. But I do think that the top of the league has been extraordinary. And there have been stories through the middle of the league that maybe are getting a little overlooked that have been pretty encouraging. And I would use Missouri as a really good example of that. I mean, Missouri had a massive injury in preseason. I went to see them practice on like a Tuesday or a Monday or something like that, and watched Jontay Porter and saw one of the really unique players in college basketball and somebody who was a real difference maker and wasn't a perfect player because he was going to have an impact on them defensively because he's not super mobile, but he also was super big and long and maybe could have made a difference that way. Regardless, he's not played, and they have still they've still gone out to a 9-3 record that includes a destruction of an Illinois team that had been really, although it's lost a lot of games, had been really competitive in most of them. They just wrecked Illinois. So I think that what Missouri's done has been pretty impressive. I look at a team like Ole Miss under a new coach. They've been, you know, do not have a lot of high quality wins, but the teams they've lost to, Cincinnati, I mean, you know, there's no shame in that. So I think that from the standpoint of particular places, there have been positive stories. The Vandy thing is a little disappointing. Florida's had great moments in it, others not. Although it's not quite what we'd hoped it would be, I had been telling people entering the year that I thought this was going to be, you know, the best SEC in a generation. And I'm not sure that it's necessarily lived up to that. But yeah, there have been some positive stories. And then at the very top, it's been really strong. I mean, Tennessee has been magnificent. Mississippi State's been terrific. Auburn, nothing to apologize for. And Kentucky is coming to the point now where you look at their resume and their performance, and you have to be really excited about where they stand.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question. You know, and when you talk about a conference overall, most times we just look at injuries impact on teams, but when the SEC has two teams that I think most people thought could battle for tournament appearances in Vandy and Missouri, and both of those teams lose their best player, that hurts the conference overall. But the thing that I think Kentucky, this is either a negative or positive depending on how you want to spin it. You know, they play the top teams in the conference twice, and Calipari has kind of made some jokes about how does this happen, you know, obviously saying that everybody wants to face Kentucky for these national matchups. But, you know, the Tennessees, the Auburns, and the Mississippi States, Kentucky's going to face them. And, you know, if they win, then the resume that they've built is going to even be stronger for the tournament. You know, but those are tougher games than, you know, they would be facing if they had the lower-level teams from the SEC going night in and night out. And how do you think Kentucky matches up against those three top teams specifically?
Well, the first thing I do want to say is that the advantage to having double matchups with all those teams is you get them all at Rupp.
Yeah.
If you have one plays against Auburn or Tennessee, et cetera, or Mississippi State, you know, maybe you only go to Starkville and you don't get them at Rupp, or maybe you only go to Knoxville and don't get them at Rupp, that kind of thing. So there is an advantage there in that you have an opportunity at home to get a high quality win. So I think that's a positive. You know, in terms of how they match up, I think they match up really well with Auburn. I think we saw it a year ago when they were not quite ready, but they were on the road and they still played a great game down there. But this is a slightly different Auburn team than what we saw a year ago. They're bigger with Austin Wiley back. And so, you know, I think they match up fine with them. The team that's obviously going to be the greatest challenge. Now, you can't take your attention away from any of the better teams in this league. But the one that's the greatest challenge is going to be Tennessee, because Tennessee is a fully formed basketball team. They know exactly who they are, what they have to be. They don't have any questions about role definition or any of that. They know I told people on like the first day of the season that was their big advantage, is that the Tennessee knows exactly what its identity is. But it's also, you know, the challenge for them, because they have to maintain an edge all the way through into March. Now, they're pretty motivated because they, I guess for lack of a better term, failed last March. Yeah. And so they're motivated to do that now because they know, you know, because they were there and they had a shot. And if you look at the bracket with the way it worked out, they could just as easily have been in the Final Four as any of a half dozen other teams. You know, Cincinnati and Kentucky and obviously Kansas State, because they were in the final. I mean, they all, and even Arizona's thinking, oh man, look, we had our shot. But Tennessee was one of those teams that had their shot and didn't get there. So I think that, That's a team that has to feel like it has a reason to stay engaged, And it's a challenge to do it, but certainly they will have the motivation to continue on.
Where do you think Mississippi State stacks up in that top four?
You know, they're probably the most dangerous in some ways because the way they play, defensively, they're very strong. That's going to be a Ben Howland deal, but they're also very unpredictable. I mean, they probably play a more unpredictable style than any. You know, maybe Auburn because they're pressing all the time. But, you know, Kentucky is conventional, and Tennessee is really conventional. Mississippi State, they take some shots. You're like, really? And then they go in and often enough that you, and your reaction to that after the ball leaves their hand is wow. But they do some vexing things, and that's true for, you know, they make it hard to play against because you don't always know what they're going to do. But they are really talented. And they are really well coached, and I think they're really excited about it down in Starkville, so that'll make the trip down there even more difficult than it usually is.
Yeah, there's obviously been some fun moments, most famously with DeMarcus Cousins and the Call Me game and those kind of things. That little rivalry is a little bit under the radar in SEC basketball, but it's fun when both teams are good. He is Mike DeCourcy. You can follow him on Twitter, at TSN Mike, and read all his work on the Sporting News. He has a recent update on Tony Bland. Tony Bland's attorney, who is the USC assistant who got in trouble with the FBI probe, had a kind of, you mentioned vexing. He had a vexing comment. So you can read about that, find it on Mike's timeline or on the Sporting News. Thanks so much for joining us today, Mike.
Oh, Curtis, thanks so much. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was great. All right, on the next segment, we're going to wrap up this edition of the Leach Report and tell you a little bit about UK basketball history. We got some sad news to pass along, and we'll do that next. You're listening to the Leach Report.
You're tuned to Talk Radio 1080 and The Leach Report. And visit TomLeachKY.com for more news and views on the Cats.
I'm Curtis Birch in for Tom Leach. Final segment here, your Donato slice of Wildcat history. Kind of a melancholy one. Bob Burrow passed away yesterday at 84 years old. He was a two-time All-American at Kentucky. His number 50 is up in the rafters at Rupp. He had a 50-point game against LSU. That's one of, you know, just a handful of guys to drop 50. And he still holds the record for 34 rebounds in a game. After his playing careers, he settled in Radcliffe and had a four-decade career as an educator and administrator. Thanks so much for listening. Thanks to Shannon, Derek, and Mike for making this show possible today. You can follow me on Twitter, at Curtis Birch, B-U-R-C-H. Thanks again so much, guys.
Thanks for listening to The Leach Report. Make sure you check out the podcast page at TomLeachKY.com whenever you miss a show. And be sure to follow The Leach Report Facebook page. If you have a question...